The Not for Tourist Guide was created in 2000 to give New Yorkers hot tips on exploring their own city. Publisher Jane Perrone and managing editor Rob Talia join me now to discuss how one goes about creating an insider's guide to a place as complicated as New York, and also perhaps share some of the city's gems that we might not know about. I'm very pleased to welcome them to my show now. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
Don't most New Yorkers pride themselves in knowing a lot about their city already? How do you sell a guidebook to a city of people who think they know everything?
Well, thankfully, there's a lot of newcomers.
And not very easily is the other answer to that question. Everybody certainly knows their own zip code like the back of their hands, but people, the longer people are here, the more they get entrenched in the neighborhoods they do know. And, you know, especially people from Manhattan, you know, trying to get them out to Red Hook or even north of 110th Street is not the easiest thing in the world.
Well, my problem is with Queens, and you have, we'll get into that later, new Brooklyn and Queens books. I just don't get Queens, even though the addresses are supposed to clear the borough up for me. you also have a membership club, don't you?
Yeah, through our website. It allows users to participate in the creation of the books, where they can basically take that knowledge of their zip code and allow us to really cover the neighborhood just so comprehensively. And there's other benefits, too, to membership. The whole book's available on the web on PDF.
So they give you tips as to things that you missed, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a section called On Our Radar, which allows us to fill in some of the gaps that have changed over the year between the publishing of the annual guides. So we're able to kind of highlight some hot spots that maybe didn't exist before or we missed or something like that through the year.
Well, let's talk about the hot spots in a moment. Can you describe the book's layout for our listeners?
Sure. The book is pretty much about half maps and half listings and text, where there's three maps dedicated for every neighborhood in Manhattan and then several neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Queens. And you get essential information overlays on the one map. Then you get sundries and entertainment overlays like restaurants and bars. And then you get full transportation overlay with all the subway lines and bus lines. And then the back section of the book is commentary on parks and airports and sports stadiums and, you know, where to get the best scalp tickets and where to do pretty much everything that you'd need to do as a New Yorker.
Isn't scalping illegal?
No. Not on 9th Avenue.
After six editions, just how fast do things change in the city? I'm assuming that some of the stuff that we have this year was in the original edition.
There's over 1,500 listings changes per year per guide, which astounded us when we were doing the books. We had no idea that things like gyms and hardware stores would change as much as they do, but they absolutely do. And banks buy out other banks, and new gym chains get, put
it's
in.
It's very hard to run a restaurant profitably, it looks like, because there's a lot of turnover with restaurants as well.
And that's why we have so many of that coffee chain all over the city, because people go out of business.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, what's the name of that
Starbucks
one again?
takes over. So what do? You wander the streets with notebooks in hand?
We have people who are pretty much in every neighborhood. Either they work there, they play there, or they live there, or all three. And so there's over, you know, there's about 15 to 20 people that submit to the guide that are paid every year in every city. And we have eight cities around the country.
I'd imagine that somebody walking around some neighborhoods with a little notebook and a pen writing things down might get into trouble. People might get suspicious.
I think our people are a little bit more subtle than that, hopefully.
Well, it took you 3 years to put together the first edition of this guide. What was the hardest, most time-consuming part then?
Learning how to do it.
Yeah,
you just had to figure it out.
Yeah,
did you have a design that you were trying to work within?
Yep, we had a vision in our head, and you know, coming up with all the different aspects of the book, because there's so many elements that are involved in the Not for Tourist Guide: the cartography, the maps, the icon placement on the actual location of where everything is, the listings, the discursive commentary about each location. It's just such a complicated book in such a small format that it took us a long time to learn how to do the research and then how to actually put it together.
So now it takes about 6 months.
Yeah. So we had a high learning curve there.
The type is small, so I assume there are people who wish you would put out a large format version.
It's very high on our list to do a large print New York City edition. Yeah. So,
what are some of the things New Yorkers have the hardest time finding? Is nature one of the high priorities?
Yeah. You know, there's just a complete difficulty in finding opportunities to get out into the natural environment, and that's why we spend so much time with our back half pages covering lots of parks, so Prospect Park, Central Park, and even kind of off the beaten track parks. East River Park has so much great stuff that unless you're in that neighborhood, you wouldn't really know of it. So, you know, we try to make it more available to other people so that they know they can get there and do the nice paths along the water and things like that.
I asked some of my friends what they'd most want help finding. Mm-hmm. And a number of people said, just especially if you have kids, how do you fill up a Sunday besides going to a restaurant or a museum?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, there's a huge for the kids section in the book that covers what to do on a rainy day, what to do on a sunny day. You know, tons of places are actually quite kid friendly, and they do advertise that. So, you know, it's definitely a very important resource.
Could you read some of the commentaries that you have on fun activities to give people an idea of what we're talking about here?
Sure.
Because it could be very dry. Something that you've worked hard to avoid, obviously.
Sure. Well, for instance, we were just talking about the kids, so we do have commentary on the Central Park Zoo, houses more than 1,400 animals, including some endangered species. Take a walk through the Arctic habitat of the polar bears and penguins to the steamy tropical rainforest pavilion. The Tisch Children's Zoo nearby is more suited for the younger crowd with its smaller, cuddlier animals.
Well, so but that's a nice one, but some of them can get a little salty, can't they?
Oh, sure. let's see. I think I've got something in mind here. We'll see if James.
For example, in the bars, I remember one bad disco, good-looking crowd.
Well, here's the Penn Station write-up. Penn Station, designed by McKim Meaden White, New York's greatest architects, is a Beaux Arts treasure filled with light and, oh, wait, that's the one that was torn down. Penn Station today is essentially a basement, minus the bowling trophies and the Johnny Walker Black.
Very good, and so true. My guests are Rob Taglia, who is managing editor of the Not for Tourist Guide, and Jane Perrone, who is the publisher of the guides. How do you decide which neighborhoods to include? Do new ones appear in every new edition?
Pretty much. The New York Guide started out with just Manhattan Island, and we were actually very adamant from the beginning that all the neighborhoods north of 110th Street were included in that first guide because it's typically a very underserved part of Manhattan. And then after the first year, we started to add pages on the outer boroughs, and then now we're up to, I guess, 9 other neighborhoods, 5 in Brooklyn, 2 in Queens, and actually we cover Jersey City and Hoboken, New Jersey as well.
And you have, I guess, discovered that Brooklyn and Queens still were being underserved, so this year you've come out with Brooklyn and Queens editions, which we will talk about later. How do you decide what neighborhoods to include? Is the real estate curve a clue? Do you cover areas where property values are on the rise?
It's not so much property values. It's really so much more about the neighborhood itself and the possibility of doing stuff in that neighborhood. So as we expanded out to Brooklyn and Queens, it was because a lot of those neighborhoods we found ourselves and our editors going there to do stuff all the time. So, you know, Williamsburg has actually become quite the place for music. And, you know, as these neighborhoods have become more destination places where you go there for other things besides just residing, it became really essential that we covered them.
Mm-hmm. I assume that also as neighborhoods change, you have to adjust. For example, I can remember years back before you started printing these guides when Chelsea was a rather depressed area.
Yeah.
So was Clinton, and now they are high-rent districts.
Yeah. Now they're the place for galleries, too. It's the It's not Soho anymore for art galleries. It's definitely Chelsea. So that's been a huge change in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I think the Chelsea Art Gallery's gone from, I mean, now I remember when the first couple opened, and now there's, I think, over 400 or something in Chelsea. So it's a completely changed neighborhood. We still do call Clinton Hill's Kitchen, though, in our book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some things we just can't get let go from. Yeah.
Now, why do you think that is? Is it because Soho changed so much it became so she that the galleries were actually being priced out?
Or the square footage just shot up. I mean, it's just way too much to handle. And I think there's going to be another shift to Brooklyn, actually, because I think Chelsea is, and I think it's going to happen quicker, you know? I mean, it took 20 years for the galleries to get priced out of Soho, and I think it's going to take a lot less time in Chelsea.
But things have, some areas that looked like they were going to become the next areas didn't succeed. Again, before you started printing the guides, the Lower East Side for a while was home to a fair number of hot galleries, but that never really took off. Yeah. They wound up moving to Soho.
Yeah, and I think, though, the Lower East Side has become kind of a club scene spot along, Essex and Ludlow and those great little streets. So they kind of take on a certain vibe of the culture, so that maybe they didn't really go for art galleries, but the music scene there really, and the club scene, is where that neighborhood went.
Sounds like gentrification is everywhere. Are there some neighborhoods that are still resisting?
Well, there's some neighborhoods.
Canarsie?
I would say, Red Hook is really an interesting study because there's been a lot of discussion about gentrification for years there, and it's still at a very, very slow pace. It's about one new something on Van Brunt Street in Red Hook about every 6 months.
Yeah, but a couple of she restaurants now, and then
two.
IKEA will be opening a Fairway, and that will change everything.
I don't know. I mean, it will certainly change things. But again, I think the pace of the gentrification in Red Hook is very much overstated. It's been pretty damn slow.
Yeah.
And there's two restaurants still only on Van Brunt, and they've both been there 3 years. So it's definitely, it's coming, but it's coming slower than, let's say, the Smith Street explosion in Carroll Gardens, which happened much more quickly.
Well, there's also the Gowanus Canal, which people said years ago, buy property because it'll be waterfront property. It still is an awful place if you
you
have any sense of smell.
Yeah, you can kayak down the Gowanus Canal, though.
Now you can?
Yeah.
And I live pretty close to the canal, so I'm there kind of a lot. And
you swim in it, right?
Doesn't seem too bad to me. Yeah.
Well, the problem with Red Hook, and now we should really be talking about this during the next segment with the people from Brooklyn and Queens, but there's no easy public transportation.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that is really more of a problem in the other boroughs in Manhattan, except if you're all the way over on York Avenue or on 12th Avenue, you pretty much are covered by a subway line. You have guides for Chicago, San Francisco, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles now.
Yep.
What's the plan here, to become the next Zagat Empire?
Hopefully a little bit more organic than that, but it's something that every city that's worth its salt needs one of these, because cities are constantly changing. There's thousands of changes a year. It's difficult for us to keep up, but we do keep up. And I just think any city that of a certain density and a certain size could use one of these. I mean, I remember when we were in D.C. 4 years ago, we were dying because we did not have a D.C. guide, and we needed to do six different things.
So is that your next town?
It's done. Yeah. Oh. It's out.
Yeah, it's very hard for me to go to a city now that does not have a Not for Tourist guide. I just can't survive.
Yeah, Seattle is probably...
You have a bit of a bias here.
Yes, I do. But Seattle is probably the highest on our to-do list.
So well, there has to be a city that just doesn't have enough stuff going on that is interesting, as large as it may be. I mean, I'm not sure that Pittsburgh is the best place to do one of these guides. I've been to Pittsburgh recently, and there are three or four really interesting things, and that would be a very thin book.
Yeah, it would be a thin book.
It might be the size of Queens.
And certainly a place like Denver or Albuquerque, we get requests, but they're certainly not very high on our list.
What about some of the, for example, things like finding a decent Thai restaurant? You know, when you want to find a good Chinese restaurant, you can go to Chinatown or Chinatowns, as it's now developed. But there's no Little Thailand, and they all look alike, but some are good and some aren't.
I think a lot of them are actually pretty good. I think Thai food, more than Japanese, more than Chinese food, there's a much greater consistency among the places, and you can get decent Thai. And there's a couple of chains. Lemongrass Grill has, I think, 5 or 6 locations mm-hmm. around town, and that's always a pretty decent bet. But mm-hmm. there's a couple of top Thai places in every neighborhood. They're just so ubiquitous. In my neighborhood in Carroll Gardens, there's, I think, 6 Thai restaurants within walking distance. So
you also list barbershops.
Do we? No, I don't think so.
I don't know. If it's 24-hour, maybe.
Yeah, maybe if it's 24 hours. But, yeah, we don't do barbershops. We do
because it would be a major service, how to get one without paying a decent one without paying a fortune. You got to take a real chance.
Yeah.
You do have to take a chance. Yeah. The books categories that we do cover are things that you need to do when you're not in your own neighborhood. So you're hungry and you're on the Upper West Side, or you've been carrying around a check and you need to deposit in your Citibank or your Chase, and you're on the Upper West Side, things like that. Haircuts, maybe, but
That's part of the idea of the website as well, is it gives us a chance to do that kind of coverage of stuff that isn't perfectly appropriate for the book, but people are still interested in finding out more about it. So that might be one of our essays that are written on the website, as well as the database that has listings that aren't in the book.
You also include essential New York songs, books, and movies.
Yep.
Very important.
So I really think a haircut would be a good idea.
We'll get that one in there for next year.
I guess the reason it's not there, Rob, is you don't really have that problem.
Nope, don't need it anymore.
I want to thank you both so much for being
with us.
I've been talking with Jane. Oh, that was mean, wasn't it? I'm sorry.
But funny, so more important.
Jane Perrone, who is the publisher of the Not for Tourist Guides, and the managing editor, Rob Talia. And we'll be talking more about them in just a few moments. Stay with us.